I call this special meeting of the Board of Trustees order. The date is May 7th, 2013, and the time is 5:15. Tony, can you please pull the board?
Mr. Cornell?
And she's in the back right now.
Mrs. Gonzalez? Mr. Medina? Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Saras?
Here. Can I believe the...
Oh, and Ms. Gonzalez did call. She was a little bit under the weather, so hopefully she gets better. I'll take this to next item.
Item 2A is interview for annual financial audit services for RFQ 13-10.
Board President Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Prager. Before you, we've placed the questions. I think you have a copy of all the questions. I think you've already discussed on who's going to ask what questions. We also have the questions here in front of the bidders, so they'll have them in front of them to refer to also. I also placed this green package in front of you. It should be right under your yellow folder. On the first page is the ranking, so you can rank them by your preferences. So we can add that up until we'll score to do the award, if you so desire this evening. Below that is our evaluation committee's recommendations as far as the way they came out with their ranking. We need that if you desire. And we also have some information. Our internal auditor did some of the reviews we did on the evaluation also you can look at. So I have the ranking from left to right. That's the way the interview process will work. We have GRP first, Smith Reeves, Stricker, Griffin, and White Center, and Campbell will be the last one.
One is the highest.
It'll be your number one choice. Number two will be your second choice.
Is this sheet the same?
It looks like it is, yes, ma'am.
Okay. I didn't. The numbers are changed?
No, they haven't. I didn't know that Tony provided that for you.
So the first individual that would be
the Gibson Rudder Confederate. That's by alphabetical order. There's no preference, just by alphabetical order.
Real quick, I'll be doing question one, Patsy two, Rachel three, Seth Hillman four, Jason five, Patsy six, Lori seven. And then what we'll do here is, let's are we all right?
I'm all the first one.
Mr. Quinn.
I'd like to come and take a look.
Okay.
Please.
I do have copies of the bids, so I have three copies if you want to look at any of these bids. We have that available for you. Thank you.
Ron, do you remember the last time we actually did the RFQs?
Yes, sir.
That we had, some of them were looked at when it came to, one was the external audit, and then there was two other audits.
A few years back, I think they were going to want to look at,
one was workers' comp.
2007?
2007, it is?
It was, before I had arrived at kind of the, my understanding is that, I guess, the RFQ went out, 2006 for the 2007 audit, or the 2007, I believe. And Edge and Associates got the financial side of it, and then there was a, I don't remember the individual's name, but she got the HR, the workers' comp and the healthcare.
And are we doing workers' comp and healthcare, or is this on?
This is just.
This is just financial services.
So when are we doing the workers' comp and the healthcare?
We can open one up to have that route.
Okay.
Questions? On your analysis and detail sheet, says S&amp;P worked with interviews, independent schools, did they work here? What did they do? For S&amp;P?
We were thinking that, Strickler was part of Gibson, not Gibson, what were they before? DBG Dunbar Honest, oh, Gibson.
Oh.
So this is before the change in the. But definitely it wasn't in the last, in the, through GRP in the last 4 years.
Are we, do you have the packets?
The packets?
There are.
Yes, I have three copies there if you'd like to look at. Would you like to?
Yeah.
I didn't want to burden everybody with a whole stack of them, but I have three copies here. Does anyone else want to see it?
I
start with you.
I'll start the clock after you ask the first question.
Excuse me?
I'll start the clock after you ask the first question.
Issue and get out of your way.
How will the firm's senior management be involved in the supervision and oversight of services provided to the district to ensure quality and timely reporting?
The partners were involved from the beginning. Let me introduce you to Shelley Ruddick, for those of y'all that haven't met her before. She's my partner, and then another partner we have listed is Belen Briones, who is not with us tonight. We sit down and we plan our approach to the school audits, and each district is a little bit different, but you all have the same requirements. We're familiar with your district and your staff, so we know what areas are most likely to have somewhat of an issue, so we take that into account in the risk assessment. The way we have it scheduled, I will be the partner in charge. However, we can rotate partners, we can rotate the in-charge individual, and we can rotate any of the staff. So you can have a totally different audit team this year from what we had last year, if that's your desire. And you can still be assured of having the highest quality staff, because we do have so many with the school district experience. So we will be involved in the planning phase. We'll come out and have the entrance conference with your staff to discuss areas we're going to be working on. And we will then allow our staff to work one-on-one with your folks, and then they will be relaying issues back to us as they come up, and we can address those as is necessary. And once the interim work is done, the partner goes in and reviews the work to see if we need to change the approach. Then we sit with the in-charge and discuss those issues, and then they'll come back out at year-end, complete the work, and then we will be involved to help solve any issues. And then, of course, at the end, we'll have an exit conference. We review the entire file at that point, and then we deal with the board members. But the partners are available to talk to the board or to your staff at any point.
How would you assess the firm's understanding of federal OMB circulars, TEA, FASRA, and their impact on school district business?
I would tell you there is not a firm in this state that understands it better than our firm. We, about 75-80% of our firm's business deals with these items. We do single audits year-round, so we're dealing with the OMB. TEA, in our handout, the first bullet there, TEA called me up a couple months ago and asked if we would sit on a committee that they're putting together to review the new updated FASREG. The FASREG is what governs the school district's accounting process. They wanted our input as an auditor. I couldn't come into the meetings, but Belen agreed to. And there's only one other CPA firm they've asked in the state to be on this committee, and it includes a few school district representatives and Education Service Center representatives. So when I say there's nobody that knows this stuff better than us, even TEA thinks so.
Thank you.
approach for assessing risk, and how does the firm's assessment of risk affect the audit procedures?
The risk assessment, this was approach that old-time auditors like myself had done for years, but it was never formalized. And a few years ago, the AICPA came out with some new regulations that basically documented how they wanted everybody to approach the audit. Well, those of us that have been doing it forever, this is what we were doing in our mind, but now there's a documentation process. But the risk assessment is the process where we come in and we interview your staff and ask them about their job duties. And what we're looking for is significant internal control steps. And an internal control is where, simplified, it's like somebody's looking over someone else's shoulder. So if this individual performs a step, we want to know, does somebody review that? Well, thank you very much. I'm a little dry. I was using my sexy voice, but I guess it wasn't working that good. So by looking at the controls that you have in place, we then test those controls to see if they're really working the way your folks tell us they're supposed to. And then based on our experience, we look at it and say, okay, is that going to give us the comfort level that we need? So after we do that, then we set the risk based on the controls. But then there's also an inherent risk factor that comes into play, and that is basically having to do with the area that we're talking about. Cash has different risks just because it's cash than does a desk. Okay, so we're looking at different things. Or accounts payable. The risk in accounts payable is that something didn't get recorded as a payable, so your liability is understated. And cash might be the opposite. You might be inclined to try and bump the cash balance up higher. Okay, so you have to look at both sides of that. And so the risk assessment then dictates the type of audit steps we'll follow. There's basic audit steps when very low risk, and then there's extended audit steps that expand upon those. And then in certain areas, based on our own experience, we may add additional audit steps on top of that just to make sure we don't have a problem. Thank you.
How will the hours be allocated among the engagement team? Indicate hours allocated among each level, partner, manager, and senior staff by significant risk area.
On page 8 again of the proposal, we have the hours broken out there. And again, the higher level are the ones that are using our experience to call the shots, and then we're asking the lower level folks to perform the tasks that we've dictated. And it's really the benefit of doing so many school districts is we can plan the test workout, and we have a number of staff that are familiar with each area of the school district. So, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to rotate staff, we have several that are familiar with the different grants and so forth. So, we have no problem fulfilling your request.
How would the firm assure the district that excessive or unnecessary costs are not billed?
we try to be as efficient as possible. And again, the fact that we audit so many Texas school districts, and Texas is the key there, because Texas has its own set of rules. Other states have totally different rules. And so, and we have audited New Mexico school districts, and it's just a different world out there. So we are familiar with the requirements. And every year, we look at each audit, and we try to find out why we went over in this area. You know, what did, for example, Tanya might have run another audit, and so she did really well in this area. So we'll look at how she approached it. So we're always looking to reduce the hours. And I will tell you, for the last, y'all have been implementing teams the last couple of years along with a number of other districts. And that was a big headache for everybody that had to work with it. It's going to be a good product. In fact, the ones that have it fully implemented like it. But the implementation is just terrible. Well, the last couple of years, we incurred significantly more time because of it. It wasn't your folks' fault. It's just, this is a totally new software, and teams' approach to implementation is they try to massage it to fit each district. And so they don't have some software says, this is what we have. You make your processes fit us. Well, they try to make their system fit some of your processes, which I think kind of backfired on them, because they would make changes for one district, which would make a real mess up at another district, and then you're having to go in and check it out. But what I'm trying to say here, to get to the point, is we wrote off tens of thousands of dollars because we did not feel it was fair to charge the district for all of that time.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Just the last question, and if you could round it up, if any negative findings or issues were found, how would you communicate those findings to the board?
We have a process. Anytime we find any issue, no matter how significant, we first go to individuals in the department. And we discuss it with them, because we can misunderstand things. So we want to make sure we have all the facts straight, and we want to make sure that the department agrees with the issue. Then we just go up the line to make sure nobody is blindsided. And then, of course, we would end up with Martha and discuss that, and then we would have our exit conference with the superintendent so that everybody's on the same page with the findings and the comments, the comments are what we put in that management letter, which they're not as significant, but they're usually suggestions for improvement to your control system. And so that's how we communicate it to you. And it has to be a formal communication, because the board has to have quorum and so forth. So we have to put that in paper. But it has been through numerous levels of review before it gets to you. And by that time, your staff has already designed corrective action for each of those as well.
Thank you.
I know this is your allocation of the time between personnel who you're proposing on this audit, on the bid rather, for the services, the allocation between your CPA and non-CPA personnel. I've seen that, but is it similar to what you've done in the past for us, or is it vary?
Okay. The only ones that may not be a CPA is the staff, the lowest level. And some of those are CPAs as well, or on the verge, at least. Yeah, they pass parts of the test. More than half the hours are CPAs.
Right. I understand that. What I'm asking is, in the past, the allocation of those hours for CPA versus non-CPA to our district, are they similar to what the proposal is?
I believe so. We always have a CPA running the audit, at least as the on-site in charge, and several of the staff. I can't remember from one year to the next exactly who, but it's always more than half the hours, and usually two-thirds of the hours are performed by CPAs.
That's what I was basically asking.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming in on that.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Rocky Reeves. I'm the audit partner of Smith & Reeves PC. Been there since 1986. Been an audit partner, or been a partner since 1996. And we currently do about 7 or 8 school districts. And hope you guys will consider us for yours.
My name is Delvin Thurman. I'm the auditor senior with the firm. I've been with the firm since 2002.
Let us know when you all are ready for questions.
Okay.
You'll have 15 minutes to answer your questions, and I'll start the clock right after the first question. What is your firm's experience and expertise in school district governmental audit?
Our firm has kind of got a niche in governmental auditing. We do a full range of services. We're doing tax returns and management advisory services and bookkeeping and payroll. And during the audit season, which is, you know, from this time of year all the way through January, we're doing anywhere from 20 to 30 audits, most of which are school districts and other types of governments, many of which are also subject to the Single Audit Act, so we're familiar with that. Some of the other governments that we're doing is, school district, I mean, besides school districts, it's counties and cities and water improvement districts. We also do one statewide organization that's a nonprofit, but because they do receive federal revenues from the vocational ed program, we audit them as well and present to their board, which one of the members of TEA is a liaison to their board. So, you know, we've had quite a few years of experience specifically in this area.
How many individuals will be involved in performing the audit, and what is their experience in performing school district audits?
We have about 14 people that work for our office, and approximately six or seven of those individuals will be involved in the various school district audits that we do this summer and this fall. Ranging from myself as the partner to some of the newer employees that we have. And all of those will be involved in some aspect or another in either performing field work or completing schedules or finishing work practice program sections or possibly even writing the audit reports itself. Of course, all of the audits before they leave our office, I review them in their final stage and sign the reports as the partner for the firm. And the folks that are going to be involved in it range in experience from just a year or two all the way to myself. I've got 27 years of experience in doing school district audits. I began auditing school districts in September of 1986 and have been doing them every year thereafter.
How will the firm's senior management be involved in the supervision and oversight of services provided to the district to ensure quality and timely reporting?
In a firm that's our size, it's only 14 or 15 people. There's not a lot of layers of management, and I'm the only audit partner. And so I'm involved in every audit that is produced out of our office. I'm available all day, every day to answer questions. I actually even do some field work myself. And all of the sections are going to be eventually looked at by one of the primary auditors of our office and eventually myself. All of the work papers and all of the audit reports are reviewed out of my office and signed off on before they are presented in draft form to prospective clients. And there's going to be varying levels of supervision on my part, all the way from performing some of the field work to the ultimate review before it goes out the door. There's not a lot of layers of management between the lowest level staff person and myself because of the size of our district, but we do have a lot of people very experienced that can complete all of those areas under my supervision.
How would you assess the firm's understanding of the federal OMB circulars, TEA, FASREC, and their impact on school district business?
Well, the FASRAG is the school's financial reporting bible, and I remember it even back when it was called Bulletin 679. So, I've been doing it for a long time. It sets out all the rules for how all of the school districts must report. There's a consistent chart of accounts that all Texas school districts must use, and we adhere to that chart of accounts across all of the audits that we do for every school district. There's lots of guidance there that we use as well, but we also help some of the school district personnel look things up on their own, find the guidance that's there, and apply it. A lot of the school districts, or nearly all of the school districts, receive some type of federal revenue, and so they're subject to the Yellow Book standards, and if it's enough federal revenue, then they're also subject to the single audit standards. So you know, we're familiar with the OMB circulars that govern either the Yellow Book standards or the single audit standards, and we apply all of those, you know, depending on what kind of federal revenue is being received. There's all the various kinds of testing that must be done to see exactly what procedures need to be performed on these various programs that are receiving federal resources. And we're extensively using the guidance that comes from these OMB circulars to apply the procedures and make sure that they're reported properly.
Thank you.
What is the firm's approach for assessing risk? And how does the firm's assessment of risk affect the audit procedures performed?
We use an audit software for our work programs. It's put out by publishers, PPC, publishers,
practitioners.
And that Thomson Reuters software with all the smart tools and the print that's available, it has within it a risk assessment section that helps us to analyze and look at the various sections of the school district or any government for that matter, and it helps us to tailor make the audit programs that we will apply procedures to the work that's involved in that school district. In addition to that, because our auditors have a number of years of experience at looking at school districts, if there's some auditor judgment that must be involved in making decisions about what procedures are performed and the outcome of those procedures and how those findings make their way into the audit report, then the risk assessment itself and the judgment that we use as auditors helps us to apply those procedures and complete the work papers and the report according to the professional standards.
Thank you.
How will the hours be allocated among the engagement team? Indicate hours allocated among each level, partners, manager, and senior staff by significant risk area.
Okay. As far as some of our newer and lower level staff, we usually assign to them some of the sections that are perhaps easier. They may be time consuming, but they're easier to complete. And those might be some expenditure testing or some cash reconciliation or working on student group information. And you know, we like to assign those sections to the newer staff in order to reduce the cost to the client. And then those areas that may be of greater concern, which would be, you know, the collecting the information for the note disclosures, maybe new bond issues, perhaps a consideration of whether there's a going concern issue. Those would all be handled by some of our more experienced staff. And then, of course, you know, we're always meeting together and exchanging ideas about what things need to be looked at. And we recommend to all of our staff people that, you know, whatever idea that they have about what procedures need to be performed or what difficulties are being sought in each of the sections, then the assistance by the experienced staff is helping them handle all of those things. But by and large, a lot of the field work is going to be done by the lower level staff and the intermediate range staff. And then, of course, like I said before, all of the reviews of the work papers and the reports before anything goes out the door is all done through my office. And so it just depends on the number of hours that are required for an engagement, because we have such a large range of clients that some of them only take maybe 100 hours and some of them may take 400 or 500 hours. And so the number of hours would be hard to determine unless we're looking at the particular size. We attempt to keep as much of the work process with the lower level staff if we can, as long as they can handle the difficulty and they're being properly supervised by my office.
How would the firm assure the district that excessive or unnecessary costs are not billed?
As you can see in our proposal to you, there's a lot of times when we will propose to a particular audit client that, you know, we think that the proposed amount of fees is going to be a certain range. For example, if we say that we think that the billing could be anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000, depending on how many hours it takes to complete the engagement. We are keeping track of every hour that is going into every engagement, and it is being calculated at the billing rate for each individual staff member, whether they're a new staff member and they have a low billing rate, or whether it's going through my office. And at the end of that process, we take a look at the over amount of work in process that's been accumulated, and we bill accordingly. Now, there's been many, many times in my career where lots of hours have been written off just to make it fair to the client. But one of the things that we adhere to is if it only takes a certain amount of hours, that's what we bill. If we bill a range of $30,000 to $60,000, we never bill the top end of the range just because it was in the engagement letter. But we're keeping good track of all of the hours based on who's doing it and what day it's being performed, and we have a good idea about the amount of hours and the amount of cost that goes into every engagement.
Thank you.
Last question. The last question we have is if any negative findings were or issues were found, how would you communicate those findings to the board?
Okay. We've taken a stance as a firm that an item has to truly be a significant deficiency before it ever would appear in the audit report as a finding. And, if you've seen any audit reports, there's actually a definition of a significant deficiency in the audit report itself. And I know from looking at the reports that we've produced compared to the ones that we've seen other people produce, there have been many times when a finding would be considered to be a significant deficiency by other firms where it wouldn't be by our firm. And so we would communicate any of our findings or any of our concerns to the appropriate level of management. And many times those minor items that are not significant deficiencies, they may appear in the management report as another matter or another issue, but it would truly have to be something that is a significant deficiency before it would find its way into the findings of the audit report.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Best
of
luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Strickler, managing partner, Strickler Vietto, LLP.
So, question number one, what is the firm's experience and expertise in school district governmental audit?
If you turn to page 4, please, of the handout, this is kind of a recap of some of the select clients that we've served over the years. We have more governmental than we do school district experience, although we've done some audits actually here in Canutillo and Isleta, relating to health insurance plan audits. But we've had some state level expertise, and as well as city, mostly large counties, cities, special districts.
How many individuals will be involved in performing the audit, and what is their experience in performing school district audits?
None with school district, all with governmental, to be a partner, manager, in charge, and probably 2 staff. So it's probably 5.
How will the firm's senior management be involved in the supervision and oversight of services provided to the district to ensure quality and timely reporting?
Me and Brad will typically spend 25 to 30% of the budget hours managing the audit, reviewing planning, meeting with management, meeting with the board.
We're usually involved in the planning phase. So kind of in the first year, we would go through all your processes and kind of develop our audit steps to kind of to look at risks. We address risk in the planning phase, and Phil and I would be involved in that for the most part. We supervise the 2 through the audit.
And what we typically do is provide our clients with a weekly kind of schedule of where we're at, if we're ahead or behind schedule, and the things that are pending. So in case we run into issues that we didn't foresee, we can all address that at that time and make sure that we're on schedule to get the reports out on time.
Thank you.
How would you assess the firm's understanding of federal OMB circulars, TEA, FASREG, and their impact on school district business?
We have quite a bit of experience with OMB, single audits. All of our major government clients are involved with OMB and single audits. And as far as TEA, we understand the audit requirements there, so I think we're very familiar with it.
What is the firm's approach for assessing risk, and how does the firm's assessment of risk affect the audit procedures performed?
Well, we start assessing risk during the planning stage of the audit. We usually typically interview board members as well as senior management and staff, and also meet with internal auditors to get a better understanding of what they perceive as risk. Any TEA feedback on their internal audits. So from there, we'll look at expenditures, revenue, kind of look at materiality, and then kind of address the overall risk within the district to plan our audit accordingly. And also look at federal and state funding sources as well.
How will the hours be allocated among the engagement team? Indicate hours allocated among each level. Partner,
manager, and senior staff by significant risk area. Excuse me, just let me pull out a bit. Typically, we budget each area and level. Typically, it's 25-30% based on partner, manager, in charge, and staff is below that. Even the RFP, we actually have budgeted hours. So we have 140 for planning, 60 for preliminary audit tests, 430 based on detailed account balances, and then 125 reporting. And out of that, partner was 75, manager was 115.
senior and staff was 225 and 340 for a total of 755 total hours for the audit.
How would the firm assure the district that excessive or unnecessary costs are not billed?
We typically scope out the audit and kind of come to a fixed fee arrangement. So based on, you know, our knowledge and our expectations, we'll set the fee at that, and that's all you'll be billed. Unless we come across something that we don't foresee or there's some problem areas, we'll sit down with management beforehand and try to get a better understanding and then kind of come with the fee adjustment from there.
Thank you.
Last question. If any negative findings or issues were found, how do you communicate those findings to the board?
Typically, we meet with management to get their responses, to see if it's how critical those findings are. And if we don't get the adequate responses and we feel that we have to report those, we'll put those in the draft of the audit report, and then we'll present those to the board when we present the draft. Unless it's clearly something to do with staff or misappropriations, then we will meet immediately with the board and discuss those issues. But if it's typical seeing a lot of findings where the report wasn't signed off or this wasn't spent or this wasn't allocated, we'll kind of recap all those and put those in our report and discuss them with the board and draft financial statements.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Gentlemen?
One more question.
Sure.
What kind of work did you do for the University of Texas? What auditing?
We're at MBE and Hub contractor for Deloitte & Touche. They are the auditors of record with UT System. So we actually were contracted with them to perform pieces of the audit statewide.
Parts of the statewide?
Right. So we actually made the UTEP. We went to Austin, did a few.
Not a particular area, but just parts.
Correct.
Okay.
But that's still on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
start off with the first question. What is the firm's experience and expertise in school district government audit?
In our firm, when we were organized a number of years ago, the focus was to be on governmental and not-for-profit auditing. So as far as our audit department, over 85% of what we do right now is governmental audits. Of that, we do a number of, we work with several districts on their internal audit and assisted the internal audit department related to school districts, and then we do a number of school district audits in New Mexico as well. So as far as government, we've done a number of, whether it's school districts, cities, counties, water districts, and so our team is up on the latest CPE for all of those related entities as far as government. My experience specifically is 16 years working on government audits. Michael as well has over 13 years experience, so between the two of us, we've done most of the governmental work, and then with our audit team now, most of everything everybody's working on is governmental audits as well.
How many individuals will be involved in performing the audit, and what is their experience in performing school district audits?
At our initial review of the financial statements for your prior year, we're estimating 4 to 5 auditors. I myself would be on site as the on site manager and as the audit partner, so that I would have direct access to everyone here as well as they would have with me. And then as far as our audit team, we do have an audit manager, we have an in charge auditor, both with school district and governmental experience, and then a couple of our other members that have governmental experience and have worked on school districts at a staff level would be here to help us.
How will the firm's senior management be involved in the supervision and oversight of services provided to the district to ensure quality and timely reporting?
I think this is where one of our strengths comes in, and it is because the way that we're organized is, as audit partner, I'm still very much involved in all of the government audits on a daily basis. Other than the very small audits where we may have to travel some distance to get to, I don't necessarily go for the field work for all of those. Definitely for all of our local area governments that we're working with would be on site during the audit as the CPA and direct access with a partner.
How would you assess the firm's understanding of federal OMB circulars, TEA, FASREC, and their impact on school district business?
With OMB circulars, we use a variety of different sections of the OMB for various governmental audits that we do. With the TEA, with the resource guide, we have used it primarily with our work with internal audits when we've assisted other internal audit school districts here in town. We do a lot of New Mexico, which obviously they have a different governing body other than TEA, so different rules, similar but different rules and different reporting standards. And then our with their impact on the school district business, I think in government, with every government, you know, many times we run into different regulatory agencies, and we, you know, as our profession, we're all experienced to pick up the different rules and use them in different ways than we have before, whether that's been internal or external audits. And have used several other federal regulatory agencies similar to the TEA resource guide.
What is the firm's approach for assessing risk? How does the firm's assessment of risk affect the audit procedures performed?
Our assessment of risk here at Canateo would be very nice. It's nice when you have an internal auditor because that is a great place to start. That is someone who lives and breathes with you every day and can really give us some insight into the district and certainly things that that he has encountered and can direct us into some of the risks that you all have already identified. What we will do then is sit down with members of the board or management and with the internal auditor and coming up with risks that are known, risks that we see, risks that may appear because you're a first year client of the firm, areas that we feel that we should look at, and then those just risks that are inherent to any audit, such as cash, are always on the top of our list. So our risk assessment determines in each area of the audit on how much we look at, the substantive procedures that we look at, or whether we can scale them back to basic procedures, either because those amounts or those accounts are a smaller dollar amount or at a low risk in an effort to save time in those areas so we can spend more time in the risk areas and certainly single audit and grants and contracts.
How will the hours be allocated among the engagement? Indicate hours allocated among each level, partner, manager, and senior staff by significant risk area.
Your significant risk areas on an audit, such as Canateo, would be conducted by the partner and by the in-charge and the manager. So the three of us would usually tackle the more the higher risk level and any awards that you have that are high risk, your single audit areas, or anything else that has come to our attention that we need to follow up on. Your lower risk areas or more repetitive areas as far as testing, such as cash, such as even though that is high risk and partners and managers would be involved in that, some of the routine test work would be done at a staff level and overseen by management that's out here on the audit.
How would the firm assure the district that excessive or unnecessary costs are not billed?
That's a very important question with our local news these days. So what we usually do is what we would do is negotiate a fee with you all. We had a proposed fee based on we were not privy to what you paid in the prior year. So we gave a proposed fee based on our review of the financials and the information that was available to us. Typically what we do is, on all of our governments, we come up with a negotiated contract not to exceed amount with you. In the last 7 years, I don't think, any instances where we've had to go above that. The only reason why you would is if something extraordinary happened and we were to talk to you about that first. Obviously, with all the excessive travel costs that we hear on the news, we are local and so we don't encounter any travel costs to get to Canateo. And then we are very comfortable with not to exceed contracts and believe that we can work an audit plan around the fee that we set up as long as it's reasonable and fair, and you would never expect any additional invoices from our firm. And I think an audit should really be thought of as a year-round audit. Typically the questions that you would have, whether it's an internal auditor or a board member, would be asked of us during the year and wouldn't be charged additionally. Usually those are questions that we would know the answers to fairly quickly and would certainly be willing to help out as part of the audit process. Usually that makes the year end audit go much smoother anyway.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
the last question. One of the things is if there were to be any negative findings or issues that would be found, how would you get that?
Well, I think we wrote that, I wrote that up on our one of our reasons why we are a great choice for Canateo. And maybe most firms would do this, but I think we're very good about never having any surprises. We should never get to a meeting where there's a surprise that anyone is not aware of. The key contact that you all would have, whoever that is that you set up for us, whether that's in finance or it's the internal auditor, those items would be approached as we get there. If it were related to one of those areas, we would go above and beyond that, the protocol that you all set for us. The external auditor is hired by the board, and you all should be in the know of anything that's going on, whether that be negative or positive. And so we would want to get that information to you, obviously before any formal meeting where we would be saying this in front of anyone else. And a lot of times when it starts out as a question or an informal comment, it's because perhaps we didn't receive a piece of information, perhaps there's something that, that we haven't been told yet. And those findings can go away. So that also helps that we don't get in front of anybody and end up solving it at a later date. Usually when we solve it, that doesn't make the news. It's the big problem that makes the news. And then the rest no one gets to hear about that other than the board. So we would make sure that all of those channels have gone through before anything is ever reported at a higher level.
Anything else?
Your experience with other school district audits, what have those entailed in terms of what was the services provided?
For Fagans ISD, we've recently worked with them on preparing for their audit. They were going to have their external audit and didn't have the manpower to reconcile most of what the auditors needed. So our team went out there and assisted them in gathering all the documents for the audit.
And you mentioned that you had done some work with respect to internal?
Yes, and that was on the internal side. And then we've worked on with other higher education with UTEP. We have, worked with another larger firm in doing the external audit for UTEP, and then the community college has outsourced their internal audit to our firm. So we are the internal auditors for the Alpesa Community College.
Can I add to that? I just want to add saying that because we have that extra department of internal audit, it allows us to really look at the inside process. Internal auditors, if that's all you do all day, you're looking at the year-end numbers, you're testing against that. But who knows how the numbers got there? When you have an internal audit area added to that, it kind of helps you understand the process more and really look at that and look at the process also, not only the end result, but how they got there. Gives us a little bit of an advantage because we're able to look at it, the mentality of the internal analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And possible action to select external audit firm for RFQ 13-10.
And did you have any insight?
Other than you have your ballot sheet there, if you want to vote tonight, you can vote and announce it tonight, or if you want to bargain with the board what they need to do.
There's you have the ballot sheet. Does anybody have one? Have
it? Should be right under your orange, your green sheet, the first page. That's your ballot sheet.
I think there's three firms that do have, I think all four are capable. There's three firms that have more school district experience.
Since this is an open meeting, do I open the doors and let them back in if they want to come in? Or
are they going to?
Yeah.
Real quick, like I was saying, there was they're all qualified to actually do the job we have of them. We need to have school district experience. And we do also have a policy in place currently, which is, can you go over that policy?
Who's the Ron? Yeah, because I'm the new guy, so I don't know, figure out what's going on. And I know it's 5 years?
Yes.
Every 5 years,
yes.
We change very strong.
And this is just a little
bit of what we have. We started the policy about 6 years ago, then we went out to the audit firm. The RFQs for those.
So since then, did you RFQ?
Well, we had gone with Edge and Associates, and then Edge and Associates had sold a company to GRP, and so they took over the final rotation. And now, last year, we were supposed to do the final rotation, so I have 1 year. The board said, the other thing we're going to have to look at is the crunch time, too, because this is when the audit firm actually starts.
So, is there a time you need to July, June, or do these processes?
They usually
only
start.
You start now?
Yeah.
Is it a 5-year contract?
No, it's not a 5-year contract. It's just every 5 years we have to, we go out.
Try a check and balance.
We change external auditors.
And it isn't at the last 5 years?
No.
No. It could be 3 years, it could be 1, it could be 2. Depending on the contract.
And, Mr. Chair, I don't recall whether the last time when we changed the policy, whether it was that we were just required to go out for a new, not to actually change it, but to...
It was to change it.
To change it. Well, previously it was, we had to actually just review and go out for it, and then the other one could apply.
So the change was to actually change it, but required it to change.
Yes. So that way there's... You know, everything's under general except accounting principles. And that changed out the firms. I believe the community college has that. There's other school districts that do have that same policy. And so it doesn't, it allows for all its best practices that you switch on.
Was somebody going to present that?
Who did? Ron and then Logan.
They went to get the policy,
yeah.
To print the policy.
I just wanted to get a copy of it. I have it here.
Oh, you
want me to give it to you? It's a CFC local, and it says, proposals for audit services shall be solicited as deemed appropriate. However, a mandatory rotation of audit firm will be required at the end of a 5-year period.
That's it.
That's it.
That's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
Y'all want to just... mark up your choices, one through whatever, and then you could protect that and then see if you want to make some discussion, or do you all want
to? If we're gonna postpone the decision to the next regular board meeting, then I think we should just do it at the time and let us
chew on
kind
it.
Of evaluate some of these.
Well, that's what I would like to ask. See, When do we need the contract fully in place to actually start the audit? So that way we don't delay.
I'm sorry.
Or see if it's worth it. When does the audit start?
We initiate communication mid-May, usually, with our first visits with a preliminary audit in
June.
They actually come and visit the district at the end, the third or fourth week of June.
Mr. Chair, I have maybe a thought. We do have two committee meetings next week. We could maybe start one a little earlier and put this on the front end, or
the special board meeting right before one. If we're just going to take this
and just take, you're not going to be
no,
on
there.
That's not, sorry.
I mean, y'all can make the decision.
I think you should just wait for the regular board.
The regular?
Yeah, and can we get
it's the following Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Chair, I move to postpone the selection on our external auditor to our regular meeting, which would be Tuesday the 21st.
I'll second the motion.
Just real quick, Steve, how long will it take us to get a contract in place to appear if we were to approve it the 21st, or the board makes a recommendation to approve the 21st?
Quickly, I don't.
Would we make a motion to enter into contract negotiations or direct?
You'd have a motion to enter into contract negotiations, and if something falls apart, obviously you'd have to reconsider that decision. But getting that type of a contract is usually, in my experience, not a problem. We usually turn that around in about a week.
So by the end of May,
would we have a final approval? I mean, would we need a board final approval, or would they just direct me and yourself to finalize that?
That's the way we've done it in the past. That's the way we've done it in the past, and that would be fine.
Okay. Is there any other questions, or we'll just postpone to the 21st on the next Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Cornell?
Yeah, I want to thank the people that applied. In the past, we hadn't had a significant response, but I'm glad, and all the firms that applied this time around, that I'm really impressed by the qualifications, and I think we couldn't go wrong with either of them. And I want to thank everybody for their application for this service, and thank you.
And thank you for coming out this evening to share with us what your company's doing. We appreciate.
Same here. I think we had any one of these firms that we interviewed today could do the job, and so I'll make that selection on the 21st. And
Chair, one other thing, and I know it's not an agenda, but with respect to the services, this is just for the financial, and we still have other, with respect to the audits of the other, right? Health. And,
right. How's that? Workers.
Excuse me?
Workers' comp.
The workers' comp and the health. We've got to probably also get those on.
Oh. Okay.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Soros?
Yes.
Thank you all for
coming. I'll take this to Item C is discussion and possible action to approve resolution addressing development within CISD jurisdiction boundaries. Mr. Blanco?
Thank you. You should have received it late, and I apologize for that. We were working on the superintendent's contract. We did get the draft resolution, and I know that at the last meeting we discussed two items. One involved the high voltage electrical lines that are being installed above ground, and the second was the approval, recent approval of quarry property, another quarry within the district boundaries. Doing two separate resolutions for items that are not nearly identical but very similar seemed to me to be a little redundant, so I actually collapsed them into one. We can certainly break it out. These could be two different resolutions, or we can go with one in the language. This is a draft. Invite your comments on it. If you'd like to see anything additional to it, anything changed within it. It's obviously up to the board to approve resolution in the current form or in whatever form we change it to. And what we did was, at least I tried to address the key issues that the board had mentioned regarding involvement of the community, the ability of residents to be able to participate in what are certainly significant changes to the area. It's my understanding that both of these kind of, I wasn't even aware personally of the quarry being approved. Kind of went through planning and zoning, I guess, at the city has been done.
What's the location of that?
I don't know the exact location of it.
It's in the same location as the other, the Abisko quarry that's up here, that they're going to take out the Arroyo next. It's going to be east,
west.
I believe going west.
Going west of down?
But I could be, you know, I might be wrong because they said they're going to get it right to the park boundary. So maybe it
south.
Is.
Going south?
It could be, yeah. I'm not totally sure, Adrian, but it's going to be gigantic. Mr. Chair, I have some thoughts on this. Steve, I think this is really good. I only, where I'd like to see some more punch in it is that you make clear in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In paragraph 5, you mentioned the residential property areas or values. But I think that has to be made bigger and clearer that the economic impact of the property values, you know, that this is going to, that's our bread and butter. To deliver quality education is the value of our property. So if our property values go lower, it causes us to once again stay in a property poor school district and, you know, not keep heading on up, moving on out like we're trying to do here. That we, you know, we've got some nice property values going, and by putting those high power lines, they're decreasing the property values. That just, you know, some more strength in that thought.
Okay.
And then I believe the last whereas, there should be something about transparency. That we deserve the right to participate in major decisions that affect services and quality of life, but also we deserve transparent government by other governing bodies. And this resolution is only as good as the person who takes it and who delivers the message. And so it's got to be somebody strong. It's got to be, you know, so they don't just go, oh, yeah, sure, here's another CanUTO resolution. Why are they going to write those up? That somebody cares, you know, that, hey, you know, we need business. We're not just writing these because we don't have anything else to do. We're writing these because we really need something, and y'all have really crossed the line in acting like, you know, we don't care. And, you know, another thing with this, I spoke to, maybe it was, I don't know who I spoke to today, so Martha Gittes is who I spoke to, about how there's even, I read in the paper about a week and a half ago, they're proposing a new hospital, not that little clinic, but a whole hospital here. Nobody talks to us about a word of it. I mean, I'm sure there's not one of us, oh yeah, I know about the hospital. No, they don't. They do not bring us to the table. It's really offensive. So maybe just, you know, some more.
Okay, I can. Fifth paragraph will add something about the economic impact and the effect on overall school resources and tax base.
Yeah, that erodes our property values, and in so doing, the delivery of quality education is severely hampered by. You know, the property values.
And I'll add, and I'll get with Gustavo as well. I had sent him a copy of it so we can go over it. On the transparency issue in the last statement. The other one about the input from other local government entities or being involved as a stakeholder in the process, I think we would add that to the body of the resolution. It would either be a new number
last one.
3 or a new 4.
And how about, like, we don't want to take this anymore?
We're meant to it. Okay. Would you like to see it brought back to the next board meeting in a newer form?
With action to. It's going to live for next.
Okay. So, do we need a motion to table until?
I move to postpone this agenda item until the 21st, when our legal counsel will come back with an updated one, and it will be with action.
Okay.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
A question, are we holding ourselves, are we delaying ourselves to what's already kind of in process for what's put first.
Oh, maybe so. I have to agree with you. I'd like to amend my motion then that Mr. Blanco hears and understands what we've just conversed about and that he could possibly bring this back as soon as it's finished to Armando. So I move to accept the resolution with the changes made and that Mr. Rodriguez would be able to sign off on it personally.
No, that's actually, that's fine. It would be approved by Mr. Rodriguez and Ms. Mendoza.
Yeah.
I'll amend my second.
And then who do you want to deliver it?
I was just going to ask that.
Everybody who has hands. I would say city planning.
No, not to whom.
Oh, who's going to be the deliverer? Sergio.
Annette. And the staff.
You're talking to city council?
And the county.
I have no problem calling the city council.
Okay.
The county commission.
Good.
I have no problem.
With a bad face.
The principal face.
Just so we're clear, then, with changes to be made, and I think I have a good sense of what you want, they'll just trust us to get it correct, and then you'll approve it with a couple of additions, with the monitor's approval, and this approval. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
definitely.
And then as soon as possible, Ms. Brigham will carry it.
Ms. Brigham, just real quick, I know we're addressing the new website, and on the board section, I would like to see board resolution.
Sure.
And I
absolutely.
Know.
You can do that easy.
Great idea.
Uh-huh.
So if we could,
we could add that now,
but in the future, we need to put...
like maybe something, a continual one or a different
data.
Yeah,
that they need to go back to the years, yes. And we could, and I myself could go back and look at, as well as press releases from the board.
And possibly, you know, people read that right in there, you know, obviously on this one nobody cared. Well, somebody might have cared on this one. You know, some kind of feedback from us to how effective this is.
Let me get with Jerry. I'm sure we can absolutely do that. What we could do either on the board website page, we could put any comments that would go back right to, we could link it to any of the email so we could link it back in that we could print them out.
Whatever happened in the comments portion of the district? Like the comments, in other words, this is ways to improve or anything, just to get feedback.
We had on the website?
Well, we don't have
one
on the website. But
okay,
we
but we
one,
could. Okay.
We had one in each front of the building.
You know what?
That
Mr. Rodriguez, we haven't had that in a long time. I'll have to do some. I can ask, and I can put it in Thursday's letter to you all. Okay, because I don't remember that for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
Honestly. That we're talking about the little blue box, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just make sure we're talking about the same thing. Okay.
Okay. So the motion is to proceed with the authority of the board president and secretary to finalize the approval of our legal counsel's resolution. If there's no discussion, Tony can pull the board.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item D is discussion and possible action regarding Johnson Controls Energy Management Project financing for Phase 2.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, board members, Ms. Brigham. At our last board meeting on April 23rd, we presented to you a third option into financing the energy management project through Johnson Control. The third option we had that arose was regarding the actual company that was initially going to finance the $2.3 million of the energy management project agreeing to fund the entire $3.6 million. There was a couple of questions that were brought up, and I was to go back and confirm before we brought the option to the board for approval. And one of the options was, is it possible to pay off this financing option with bond, future bond funds? And Mr. Braden, and you received the three sheets of paper. The first cover is a rental payment schedule, the revised one. But if you go to the email that is from Paul Braden, which has some red ink on the bottom section, in this he is stating that we can certainly, if the board wants to move forward with an additional bond issue in future years, we could actually add this financing that we've got to for the phase two of the Johnson Controls project into a referendum for a bond series, bond election. So we can pay it off in that manner. An additional question that was brought up is whether or not there was a penalty in paying off that debt earlier than the proposed 15 years. And that the that penalty issue was related to the phase one of the Johnson Control project, but it does not apply to this one. And what I did is I provided the email that was provided by the All American Investment Group, Ms. Kelser, who has been assisting with the details as to the financing option available to the district. And so both answers or questions that you had, I was able to get clarification on. I did share with Ms. Urbina as well as Mr. Blanco their comments and statements. And so at this point, it is up to the board to consider the third option of financing to All American Investment Group, the full project of Phase 2 Johnson Control.
Anybody have a question? What's the administration's recommendation?
My recommendation is to move forward with this third option as we consider the consideration of using fund balance or maintenance tax notes were probably not the best option. Yes.
Any questions?
Marcia, what couldn't we do part fund balance or some of the recapture from this year?
I don't have a final amount on the recapture. However, my preliminary review was only at about $500,000.
Okay.
And so when I presented to the board on the 23rd, it was, more information regarding this option was asked, and that's what I brought it for. But I don't feel that we were going to have additional enough recapture to cover the shortage of that 1.3 shortage that we had.
And the payment amounts each year is so approximately $240,000 to $340,000.
Yes.
Why is it going up each year?
It's my understanding, and I don't know if Jennifer can assist me in the response, but I believe that as the project comes to full completion, then the more energy, more savings is going to be captured, and that's how it's going to be paid off. And that was my understanding of, of the structure. Because the savings is what's supposed to pay off the
equipment.
Yeah, yes.
We're going to do most of it by October, right? The only thing we're not doing is the
CMS or it's going to be for
no,
AMS?
I think they're actually going to be changing the schedule here soon. So yeah. It may happen in the next year or so, or 7 to 9 months.
Like 90% of it's going to be done between now and October, right?
Correct.
I would definitely have to get more information.
I just don't. If we have a fixed interest rate, without allowing for the payment, I want to see the amortization without allowing for the payment from savings. I want to know what this financing is going to cost us. Yeah, the end payments is $100,000 more. I don't understand.
The additional $100,000 was because the savings that was projected was at $2.3 million, which was what going to be originally financed. Mm-hmm. The hardware, if I understand correctly, the HVAC controls was the additional funding that was required, the $1.3 that was okay. Not part of that.
Can we have, though, just an amortization? Forget about the savings that come to us. Can we have an amortization of the actual payment amount we are going to have to fork over? I understand that some of the money we're going to get from savings to pay it, but I want to know the actual check we're going to write to them every year.
Okay. And my understanding was
that not including, not reduced by the savings we're getting. I mean, that should be the same, right? If we have a fixed interest rate of 2.54%, every payment from here on out should be the same. How much we actually use from our M&O and how much we use from the savings because of the implementation of this is different.
I'm not sure if you have the document that I have provided, the memo on April 23rd. No, it was a memo like this one.
Page five.
The columns are debt service amount, savings amount, and contribution amount. And so the debt service amount is the full amount owed. The savings amount, the 129. Is related to what we were, in essence, what they're saying is you have to pay the full $300,000, but you all can, you're projected to have savings that will offset the payment.
So,
but in essence, my understanding is that we would be paying the full $300,000 too.
I know, but why is it different everywhere? If we have a fixed interest rate, 3 point whatever million it is. Why don't we have a set exact payment?
I will definitely get that information.
Okay. The contribution is always the same, right? It simply gets down here, it goes down. But this here is the savings amount based upon their projection. Is that correct?
You know, but the actual debt,
right?
The debt service, which is what we actually have to pay out every year, is
different. I
don't get the difference
when we have I'll a fixed interest rate.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should do this, but can you provide us with an amortization of a 15-year period, fixed interest rate 2.54? Is it compounded, just simple interest?
That's my understanding.
Is it? That's my understanding, but I'll double check.
All right.
Mark?
For 15 years.
Yes.
I think maybe the answer to that is if you look on page 6, and there's going to be some change because this woman wrote her email, something's different. But it's got contribution amount. And you see how it's the same $110,000 all the way down, but in the last 2 years, they combined that with the savings amount. And the savings amount is what's variable. It's not going to be what we pay. It's going to be, am I correct
yes,
in what I'm saying?
That is my understanding.
It's
of the
what we save. And the contribution plus the savings, and this is what's very backwards, would equal the total debt service amount. And so the difference that they're finding here that we're seeing is because there's a variable savings per year. And the savings appears to grow more as the years go by. I'm not totally sure why, but this is just what I'm seeing.
That's right.
Like about by $100,000. I don't really see how that's possible, but...
And I also have the payment schedule from phase one, and the structure of the payments are the same. Of course, they say the savings, you know, where it gradually increases, but it's not a fixed payment amount every year. It varies from year to year, starting with fiscal year 13 of $61,000, and under year 15, we're at $138,000.
But just to do an amortization, let's assume that we're not going to figure savings or anything. Let's print out an amortization,
$3.6 million,
2.54%. What is the...
Okay.
So what Lori was talking about, the ESCO, which is the law,
right,
states that the savings has to be incurred to make those payments. And so there's more savings than the actual payment, not including...
Well, I understand what the issue is.
The problem is amortization.
The problem is, regardless of whether we still have a commitment to the financing people, and I want to know what that's got to be the same payment every year. How we're going to end up paying for it through savings and whatever, even if we don't make the savings. I understand Johnson's really going to pull me that. I want to know what that constant payment is going to be.
Okay.
I don't see it anywhere on
there. And what the interest is. Do you want to see the amount that we're going to pay?
Assume we're buying a house.
Right.
Yeah.
For $3.6 million. Well, give me a 2.54% amortization for 15 years, simple interest.
And the reason, part of the reason is that we can pay it off earlier, see where that.
Exactly.
Okay. And we have to know exactly if we have it.
Because if it's at the front end or at the back end, and then that way we could
be the split, we might be able to have it better.
Savings in the long term once we go out for the bond change. That's what you're getting.
I will see if I can actually have that ready for you for Thursday packet. I'll contact them first thing tomorrow. They're fairly quick in responding to my requests.
All right.
Are we okay with
I'm okay moving forward. I think that we ought to, because of the amount that we're going to, you know, end up having to pay on this, that's cutting in about roughly 25 to 30%. If assuming every year we end up with approximately $1 million extra for compensation packages and every other priority that we have, while this is a great interest rate, that's going to really hamper us in providing, you know, raises to our teachers, to administration, to our other staff. You know, it's great to have it like that and not be able to, you know, move it over to the other side of INS, but it sure is going to hamper us in doing that, and I don't think we can really sustain that for an extended period of time, because it's really going to prevent us from our, you know, every year that we're reviewing TASB to make sure that we have our payment system, you know, our equitable payment schedule that we're trying to achieve, and competitiveness within the region on our teachers is going to really, you know, anti us sometimes to do that. That's what I've been taking into account. Other priorities we may have for a certain year.
It'll be a must-have.
Huh?
It'll be an automatic note
having
to balance
it,
but it's
a life. Yeah, it's just
sustainable.
Yeah, it's good and bad. Cheaper interest, but we end up paying for it by not being able to give teachers raises or as much as we want. So, but no, I'm okay with moving forward. The alternative is,
did you want to take over?
I think we should move forward with it, and the only thing we need to do is set a strategic plan as to, you know, once our superintendent comes in, that we fill our positions, get this 5-year plan done, project when we're going to, you know, when it would be time for the board to consider going out for another bond for the planned other facilities that we're going to need, and then to set aside that that 3.6 billion in the next with a referendum. I mean, it's great that we will implement it and do it now. It's going to save us a ton of money, not just in interest, but a ton of money, and being able to put it now and keep it from costing us millions of dollars more. So it's a great, great idea. We just need to switch it over to the other column of INS as soon as we can.
Once we plan this, can we get a motion?
I have one more question.
Go ahead.
Did I read correctly in this phase two that we're discussing tonight? No. No penalty.
No penalty. No.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
With a 30-day
advance notice. And even a partial prepayment?
Didn't discuss. I guess Riley asked that too.
Yeah, if you'll just ask,
partial
I
think payment.
You can move forward.
Okay.
Because that way, once you finalize what those recapture,
we may be able to cover that 1.3. That was the difference.
Yeah.
Marty
saved.
And Martha, one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
The $3 million extra that
is
still...
It's in debt terms. In the bond funds. Yes,
it's still in the bond funds.
It's still in the bond.
We have not transferred it.
I never
So
did.
We're still fine and being able to access that.
For other projects, yes.
Okay. So, do I have a motion?
I so move.
Administration's recommendation.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation. As presented today by administration regarding Johnson Control Energy Management project financing for phase two. Hearing no discussion, Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Cordaro?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
I'll take us to next item.
Item E, discussion and possible action regarding a viable course with which to move the Canutio Middle School building addition forward. Ms. Matthews.
One other, before we get off to the next agenda item, Chair, I'd like to see that Martha, that maybe we could set that off, like, you know, when you report the INS and all that on the monthly reports,
okay.
That you have our, you know, that is a separate, so we know what it is.
Okay.
Even though we know it's part of M&O, it really...
We'll check it.
Yeah, just so that we can have a separate...
That would be a good book.
Yeah.
We need it.
Yeah.
So separate reporting
on the,
of both, please.
Of the, yeah.
Of both phase one and phase two.
The financing part of the, yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Okay, no problem. So that'll take us to the next item.
Item E, discussion and possible action regarding a viable course with which to move the Canutio Middle School building addition forward. Ms. Matthews.
Good evening. Thank you for taking the time this evening with only 1 month left until school ends to talk about the potential future of the Canutio Middle School building addition. I put together a letter. I was trying to think of all the possible ways that we could move this project forward if the board should choose to do that. So I tried to put those together in the letter of the options that I presented to you all earlier. There's two components to moving it forward. There's the contractor and then the architectural services, you know. And so I'd like to start by going through the options for the contractor. We had discussed the design build option, which means we'd have to kind of advertise it and go out and kind of treat it as a separate project with a new timeline. And then we had talked about using our existing CMRs, whether that be Haynes, Byers, or VMAC, and soliciting a price from them, or utilizing Byers. Byers' fee proposal was attached to the cover letter. And originally, they used a direct construction cost of $555,000. However, in the proposals that you see this evening, they did an independent takeoff, and they believe that they can do the project for about $442,000. That means that they have basically $2 amounts in their fee proposal, one for $79,000 and the other one for $104,000. The difference being with the $79,000 number, That's if the project is awarded concurrent to the days on which they're already in site doing their original scope of work. And the 104 being if it's completely outside of those days. Now, those may overlap, but you have the potential to have up to a $24,000 savings. Okay, these two numbers are substantially lower than the original two numbers that they gave you. The original numbers they gave were 102 and 157. So, while we're on the subject of the contractors, do you have any, is there any questions on, yeah?
I do, I have a question. When you're talking about this, and I see the package that you put together for us, I also see the 442 number you say, but I also see, oh, I see, no, I just answered my own question.
So I think the first step would be to talk about the options for the contractors and how you guys wanted to move forward with that. And I'm just trying to get a little input on the kind of direction.
Mr. Mandeen?
Yeah. Again, I go back to the actual size of this building. Submitted from Renee and Kay regarding the amounts. Really, we're building a small building.
Yeah.
A big budget, so. But it's still 3,370 square feet.
Yes.
And even pegged at the what was the lowest revised amount? 443,000.
442,000.
Really, almost 443,000. Yeah. And then their fee being 79,000.
No, of course their fee is to fluctuate, right? Their fee is only a percentage amount. So when we awarded it, would just be with a percentage amount. And if they put it out to bid and it came out to 350,000, buyers' fee would shrink to whatever the percentage.
Option, okay, so we have option two, right?
Yeah, basically it's 18% with 4% of that being contingency, 10% being general commission.
And with the discussion on the MNK fee, did that stay or were they going to provide the same amount with possible addition?
In the case of the architectural services, there's a lot of ways that we can do this. There's actually four different ways. Since I wrote the letter, two other ways were presented to me. We could go out for a completely new RFQ. That's one option. We could choose NAK's fee, the 51 or the 57,000, 51,100. We could, of course, go to the second-ranked vendor, which I found out from Mr. Gatlin is the vendor ranked after MNK is Carl Daniel Architects, MNK wrote that option to my attention. And then, of course, there's the small miscellaneous projects contract, which is Philo Wilkie. So we have four different options that we could procure the or move forward with the architectural services. But if you want to talk about a cost and time analysis, the only option that enables you to move forward with the project immediately is MNK. And so you're saving right now, if you're able, and that's one of the reasons why we're presenting at this board meeting and not at the 21st. If you're able to move forward with the project immediately, in with buyers or with anyone, the savings of the general conditions, you save $24,000. So in order to experience overall cost savings, you would have to say that somebody would be able to provide you architectural services and you anticipate a savings in excess of $24,000. That means you would have to find a design firm that could design it for less than $26,000 just to break even. Just to break even.
Unless we go with the design build, right?
Oh, well, the design build would be... Right, so you're talking about... Yeah, well, with the design build, you'd have to pay all general conditions, all, you know, like a project from scratch.
But there's...
You'd be experiencing some savings.
The design build is... There's more possible savings when it comes to design build than CMR architect. And as well as time. When you look at the models.
No, I disagree with that because you're experiencing some savings because buyers is already there for the original scope of work. So I think the cheapest contractor would be buyers because they're already there.
at this point, but it looks like with the fee that they're proposing, that's not the cheapest option. And the only way we would know that, so the other option is, it goes up a certain amount of percentage, right? If we, 1775, is that what we're looking at?
Which one is that?
1775, 18%. So if we were to wait, let's say 2 months, it would be 18%, correct? We don't make that. So.
No, if you were to wait 2 months, it would be 23%.
15. Oh, okay.
So if you, yeah. And if you look down at the breakdown, if you look to the page after the that one, you can see that in reality, that is overhead and profit of 3.5%. This is actually 0.5% cheaper than what you got from banks.
That's a cost of buyers.
Yeah, that's a cost
and
of buyers.
And so, the design build model is supposed to work to that's what I was trying to clarify. Did you talk to Oscar?
Yes, I talked to Oscar.
Was he going to be present at this meeting?
No, he's in China.
He's in China?
He's
on vacation.
He's
on vacation.
He's
in China.
China.
And nobody else would. Okay. I guess I'm trying to think of, you know, the training and the conference that I've been to when it comes to the design build model. One is to be, makes scope of work a lot.
If
I mean, not the scope of work, but it makes the whole project a lot faster than having architectural services from CMR. Because the CMR is one of the more costly methods, but you're supposed to use that when you actually go out. Architect, so it starts at the beginning.
Since Oscar's not here, you know how in that game show where you can like call external help, can we call Steve?
Lifeline.
Some reference? Lifeline, yes. Can we call Steve on the lifeline?
Steve?
Yes, sir.
I'm
familiar with design build and the other options. I think the difference between them is that design build can be seen as a way where you might realize some savings. I think timing-wise, though, with this project, you'd be hard-pressed to find a firm if you do a brand-new request for proposal or qualifications for design build firm. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody. Even if they come in at a lower percentage, it can save you money because of the timing issues and the savings you realize with buyers. I want to get an architectural with a 10K or the others. Or if you choose Baines or REMAC to do the construction, I just don't know if they've even said that they were willing to do it.
One of the things, just this is my personal opinion, I mean, we really haven't used a design build in this district, and I would like to look at that in one of those options to see if there is a savings and see how that system works when it comes to a smaller project. Does anybody have a question?
I do. A comment. I'm looking at this memorandum from buyers, and it looks to me like the bottom line is that they're estimating it cost $127 a square foot. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
That's really reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, the words on the street about this project throughout, and I've talked to it with BMAC, and everyone's like 430. They put 442 when they did the math. They did it based on 3,500 square feet when it's really 3,370. So I think their construction cost is right on target. And I think that their 3.5% of overhead and profit is 0.5% cheaper than Baines for a smaller project. So, I think you're getting a deal.
Yeah, it's 127, but I can agree that it's very reasonable. Mm-hmm.
I
Yeah, that's what's good to me.
Well, we pay this wires fee.
Certainly means completely different materials.
Well, keep in mind though that 79%, when you look at the breakdown, 4% of it is, you know, is contingency, which, you know, hopefully we won't have to use. One can only help. So that's not necessarily money that the buyers would collect.
And can you talk a little bit about option 2B?
Option 2B. Oh, yes. Basically, the fee proposal that you see here for buyers, I could obtain a similar proposal from Baines or VMAC. However, Baines did not bid the package that included CMS. They're not really, although they could throw, out a high number, but I don't really see them being, you want somebody that's interested in doing the work. And, you know, VMAC's a, you know, good partner of the district, and I'm sure they'd do it, but it does get, it does become a lot of people on set. But if we want to pursue VMAC, we could do VMAC. I could ask them.
And what's your fee proposal, writers, on the other project?
On the other project?
Percentage-wise?
4%.
4%, and this one they're asking?
3.5.
3.5.
And on the other, on the architectural, what's the percentage when it comes to the overall project of the CMS?
Oh. 9, originally it was 9.48. It depends on, based on their original budget we gave them and their original contract amount.
So it's 9.48, and for
that's the contract they have in place.
And for the addition that they're looking at, what's the percentage?
Based on, because it's based off of their construction costs, based on the construction costs that they provided, it was 9.19, and based on the construction costs.
I'm talking about the previous project that they got with the district.
9.48.
Not the, which one are you talking about?
The original scope of work for CMS.
The original? Is that 9.4?
Uh-huh.
And so now they want 3.5?
No. Buyers.
Yeah, that's two. Buyers. Sorry. Yeah. Buyers is 3.5, and then MAK is 3.5.
You know, I'm sure Baines and Buyers, even VMAC, would be okay with giving us some sort of proposal, even though we know they're going to be high, especially paid.
Yeah.
But it's good to actually see it.
Well, you never know until we get the proposal.
Exactly. That's, right. That's kind of where I'm going. Right. It's just about getting that information, because I still feel comfortable just not seeing all the options and what they are providing Baines, Buyers, and being that for option 2.
Okay.
Is there any way to do that?
Yeah, we can do that. I can approach, there's nothing wrong with that now.
Getting no, that's fine. You would be asking them, since they're already in a contract with you, with CMRs mm-hmm. and various projects, to consider an additional portion of the scope of work that would be added to their agreement. They don't have to, though.
Yeah.
I've met with Baines. I think it's fine to ask. Mm-hmm. You just say that, but I think the only ones you'll get are going to be Buyers and VMAC. So that's just based on our communication with the parties.
Well, we never know.
Just VMAC, really.
We have one. If I might ask, since Baines did not bid on that project, the small projects, can they be in part of the
negotiations? They did not bid at all.
Neither
did VMAC.
Not on the original.
Oh,
they
actually,
did on the original.
Hold on though. This reminds me, VMAC signed a letter in which they agreed not to do any other projects except the elementary school in exchange for the fee restructuring.
That's right.
So.
Well, could we just at least get a proposal to see where we're at?
I need to go, but let's wait. That's a very good point. I do remember that you
said that now.
Yeah.
Part of DMAX
restructuring.
Part of DMAX and the consideration is going to be a problem. I think that's correct what Ms. Matthews is saying. Part of the consideration for the restructuring of their original CMR contract, you all had two different plans for development of two schools. Mm-hmm. We changed it to keep them as a CMR. And part of that consideration was that they gave up the right to handle certain other projects. They might not even be able to do this. We'll go back and look at it. And on the Baines, I don't know the answer to that, but I think it would still be okay if they wanted to.
Yeah.
In addition to their scope of work. I just don't think that they're interested in it.
Yeah. Like, usually when we get, you know, sent back or whatever, we finagle a price.
Ron, real quick.
But in the sole case of buyers,
They did provide, it's when we went back and asked them for proposals. We had asked Ms. Matthews to go 1, 2, 3, and 4, but you just went 1, 2, 3, and then you separated 4.
No, you know, the thing is, they just...
So you did 1, you did 2, you did 3, 1, 2, 3, and then you did 4.
Yeah, but there were respondents who did 1 through 4, and they just flat out did not give a price for it.
The original ones, my understanding when you looked at that, I think it was like High Ridge, and there were some other people that did not bid for the small work and all the other stuff.
Well, no, the first part of phase one is actually just the qualifications. We actually went out for bid for the qualification part. The second part was the pricing and the projects, and they did not bid on those projects.
No, they didn't.
They bid on projects 1 and 2.
3.
And 3, and a combination of 1 and 3, I believe. But they didn't, it was obvious they didn't want anything to do with
they were the only contractor that was so disinterested that they, what they're trying to do is, and from our other meetings, because we've been meeting with them, right, is they're trying to build the 3 building additions, and not only are they trying to get just the 3, they're going to bid all 3 together. I mean, they just want one monumental package.
I think the safest, right, if either 1 design build or 2 go back and negotiate these prices down.
Negotiate the prices down with whom?
With both buyers and architect.
Certainly, if Ms. Matthews wants to talk to them, if they're willing to do that, they can. Not a requirement if they agree. So
if they don't agree, then we could just go out for design build. And that makes it clean, and just we actually test a new model to see how that methodology works.
We could do that. It's just a timing issue. It's going to take, 8 to 10 weeks probably for that process.
Yes. We could narrow that.
No, because in addition to that, the architect would need to design it from scratch.
Well, it's a design build model, so at the same time they're working.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a lot faster model than just designing it and then either hard bid. But it provides... Even you could have M&K and Friars team up if they wanted on the design build to provide that fee, or whoever else wanted to team up however they wanted to see what those costs would be. But at least it's clean. We go out and we look at the new methodology, especially for small stuff like that. Let's say if we wanted to build a weight room at the high school or something. Yeah, something.
So you'd like to go out for a small project for a
culinary kitchen.
Culinary kitchen. So is then the direction to pursue a design build?
That's what I would recommend, unless the board feels different.
Should we have the discussions with Ms. Marsh first? See if they will come back.
I think it's a cleaner method because then you have the design build and we're able to see. If not, we could even go back to option 2A.
Sure.
Mr. Quinn.
The only problem I see with the design build is, 1, the timing. Mm-hmm. 2, with respect to any issues of working out with Johnson Controls and the control issue, if we do design build, we're gonna get change orders. From the other aspect of it.
On the construction side or on the
both. Well, we're not gonna have a CMR who can adapt to that.
But what we have to provide on that design build is a good scope of work, which Ms. Matthews and Ron need to.
And where are we gonna direct that they do that with?
With they have to provide the scope of work of Johnson Control stuff.
Johnson Control doesn't have that yet.
They don't have what?
This project.
It's not completed.
Yeah, but the scope of work, like what are we actually using within that? So that way when it's a design build, we put in those internal controls.
I think we're asking for some headings.
Just bite the bullet?
I think we ought to just bite the bullet, talk to buyers and then see if they can. You know, the other thing is that their estimate is 442. That's more within range from the 550.
Yeah.
And we saw numbers as high as 600 too.
Yeah, but you know, I still think $130 a square foot, but don't have restrooms or any other than just the lighting stuff. Might be a little high, but it might come down a little bit less than that. But we don't know until we do the bids out.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that to secure the savings is through the CMR and not the other way. I mean, we can hire administration to talk to both buyers and the architect and see if they can, you know, work with them. And I think we have a director to go ahead and start negotiations with them and do it, because the longer we wait, the more problems we're going to have. Johnson Controls is not going to be able to get their controls into the package and do them at the same time. They're going to have to come back. We're going to have a cost addition to that.
Has there been an estimate from Johnson Controls as to what it'll take to outfit that?
No, the way this would work is the way our other building additions are working. We have a two-page set of facilities guidelines that Johnson Control just volunteered to give us. We've been distributing that to the architect firm, so when they bid it with the controls to make sure their Johnson Controls compatible, to make sure the units are Johnson Controls compatible. Most of the engineers, they know what units that they fabricate, so they put that order.
Those are just the controls. Is there not going to have to be...
Yeah, there's going to be new units and stuff that will be provided by the general contractor.
The other thing I would do is, you said who was CDA and the other, just to get a price comparison.
No, we can't really do that with architectural services. We have a proposal on the table from M&K. Which is pretty much their final offer. So you would have to really direct me to cease negotiations, and you would need to ask me to move to the second, which is CDA, or you'd have to direct me otherwise. But you'd have to definitively close that discussion, and then we'd have to go from there.
Mr. Chair. One other thing, if we don't get one of this, we're not going to get them this summer for the kids to move into it. That's going to be an issue. As it is, we're already putting that campus through this summer, and then to extend it beyond the August to complete that building is going to cause other concerns.
I guess the other thing, we're adding another $500,000, and what was on the fires? On the other work, what was the percentage when we asked you to go negotiate that?
This is the percentage, just the identical.
What was it?
I believe it's 3.5. It's the same. I can almost with 95% certainty tell you that. I will leave room for a,
so if we had,
for a mental lapse.
And what if we were to include it? Since we included an extra 5, what did that percentage go down?
Actually, you can see in the attachments that I gave, there is a proposal that has a very large number that says, well, total fee percentage. Canateo Middle School, if awarded concurrent with package 4, total fee percentage 17.6, the $384,000 number.
Yeah, but do you have
and that's, in other words, that's their entire bid package.
Yes, page 11.
How much is that above the original?
Than the one just for CMS?
Yes.
It's lower. In other words, when they average it out with all the other ones, it comes out lower. And the reason for that, though, as you can see in that one, which is the inclusive entire bid package, it's the exact same item 2A construction phase services overhead and profit. It's the same 3.5%. What varies is their pre-construction services fee. So yeah, they're consistent with the three. They're consistent with their 3.5 in gross seller funds.
Is that correct?
Yes.
I should move for that.
a motion and a second. If there's no discussion, Tony.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Sterling?
Yes. Thank you very much. I'll text Dr. Reyes. She'll be so excited.
She'll be dancing a jig. She will. I've seen her the other day. She was on my
step. Yeah,
I
very
good. Oh, you do?
Yeah. Okay. Something right there. That's
right. Guys, yeah, we're looking at possibly even a number that's maybe saving 30, 40, 50,000 yeah. for a lot of other headaches.
Yep. It was the 3,370 square feet. You know, it's just hard as well.
It's not that.
Hey, Ron.
Yes, options.
We're beyond the point of
what we can address.
Well, not if we want to get it done this year.
Yeah.
No. On
other issues.
It's already done. So
let's move forward.
All right.
Let's get this done. They'll be happy that they can
have this
start in and leave them alone next year.
Item F, discussion and possible action regarding budget amendments. Mrs. Aguilar.
Good evening. You were presented with a listing of various budget transfers for various reasons. And do you have any questions at this time regarding the budget transfers before you approve? They have been working very hard to fundraise the $17,000 that they need to attend. I did meet with them this morning specifically because we're down to D-Day as far as cutting the loss of the POs. They're about approximately $1,200 to $1,500 short. Oh, but they have some fairly large activities this week that they're confident will get them to the goal by this coming
Friday. And Mr. Chair, for some reason they don't get to the goal, can we supplant them and support them to cover what shortage they may have left?
And the principal is, she attended the meeting as well and is willing to cover with her budget if there is a shortage as well.
Okay. So it's covered?
There's no way that it's not going to happen in their eyes. They will make it happen.
This is JDE, right?
Yes, JDE, sir.
I don't have a problem. Do we have a motion? To put the budget on?
So,
I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second. Here no discussion. Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next item.
Item G, discussion and possible action regarding extension of bank depository contract.
Mr. Chair, I move to extend our bank depository contract with Wells Fargo.
Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Just real quick on the length of working the contract extension.
Two-year extension. It'll be another two-year.
It's a two-year extension.
Yeah.
And when will we be going out for another year?
We can actually extend this for two more two-year periods after this, and then we'll have to go up with it again. So we can
do it for another 4 years.
No, it's 2 years and then another 2 years.
Two more two-year extensions. So actually 6 more years after this.
Thank you.
Yes, it's a very complicated bid, so.
Sorry.
Okay. If there's no questions, there are no discussions, Tony, can you call the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next item.
Item H1, purchase of SUV for the migrant education program.
What I have a question regarding, I mean, I know we're going through a cooperative of we wouldn't have time to get quotes locally, well, for an RFP or RFC.
Actually, I did look at the co-op on Region 19. They do have one now for vehicles. The only issue is it's a six-month waiting period to order them.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
The reason we went...
They have to be in...
Yes, they have to be in order, so we have to select...
Did we call and see if they could get it within...
Yes, I did. I called all of them locally. I called about four other ones from Byborn. And this company is the only one that actually has them in stock, ready to ship, that we can get delivered to El Paso by June 30th.
Wow. So nobody locally can deliver them.
And they are white and colored.
White. They have to be white?
Boring.
Well, it was recommended that.
Orange.
So we can put the cool thing on.
So you can put the
thing. Our new charter activity bus is going to be blue.
Maybe it?
It has to be Columbia blue.
Could be orange.
With flames.
We'll need time to order that for sure.
Yeah, we will need a little time to order that.
So, if there's any questions? No questions, do I have a motion?
I so moved. I'll second it.
Question. Mr. Gavin, I'm glad to see the purchase of this vehicle. This will be housed. Of course, at our facility on Chicken Farm Road, and will be used exclusively for my children.
Yes.
In other words, Ms. Brigham, you can't use it.
No, I know. But that's why it's white. I ordered the orange one.
She has children that migrated from Boston. That's
right. Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Will carry our logo? All our IDs?
Yes.
It has to have a logo if it has a clinical case. That's part of the regulation. Mm-hmm.
It does carry. The gray one now has a logo.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. So we can't use this on our trips.
No. Unless we take the kids with us.
Is there any other questions?
Migraine.
There are no questions. Tommy, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Discussion and possible action regarding purchase of desktop computers for district-wide use. I'm sorry.
I have a question. How does that compare to the budget amendments we just made?
Let's see, number two,
there is the budget amendments are not for, they're for the CAPE program, but no, this purchase is through school resources.
Yes.
As part of the planned cycle of replacement of computers.
Right, on page 40. So this is just like we get new buses and we're keeping our buses up.
It's
this
a state
is just program. Maintaining the...
It's a replacement cycle, Ms.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I might add that the bid actually for this expires on May the 15th, so that's what we're trying to get. So I wrote the bid so they would have to hold the prices for a year. That's why we're able to take advantage of this.
What is the cost benefit analysis compared to this brand compared to the brand that we've always used, which is Dell?
The Lenovo? We've been doing the Lenovo now for about 3 years. And we have about the Dells, the last two shipments of Dells before they gave us the last shipment a couple of years ago. We had a devil of a time with those with their repair. And the fact is, it was a couple of them. We're replacing some of the Dells because of that problem.
I remember at the evaluation of the RFP, the IT techs were mentioning the difficulty in getting the certification they need from Dell to be the warranty, to us to be a warranty station for.
I mean, are we getting the optimal, I guess, when it comes to cost? Well, not necessarily compared to Dell. What is the best product out there that has the biggest return for the district? I mean, is it Lenovo? Is it?
When we did this bid, I was sitting in on this bid.
And what we did, no, what we're trying to do is we're trying to at least standardize, and we're trying to also get the company that allows us to be the replacement, that we don't have to go jump through hoops like with Dell, and that we become the certified dealer. So we then get, so we have to bring that into effect too, that's going to relate to the cost. We've had excellent luck. This is going on our third year, at least our third year with Lenovo, not necessarily the same company, I think the same company for 2 years. And what we do is we have it on the spreadsheet. We do have it. We have it listed. We put it on the RFP. It's going to be X amount for dollars. Then we also do, I think it might be about 15% that we have, that we, you know, can put 15 points as far as compatibility. And then we also have some points for able to
use. Is this for laptops or desktops?
This one's desktop, sir. We have a separate one for laptops.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. The specifications on this, I don't see like specifications.
Yeah, it's on.
So part of the RFP, so we had that included. I don't know if you want to see, I can get it to you.
Yeah, I just wonder what it was that we're getting. You know,
it was top of the line at the time, so that was a year ago.
And what they do, though, the price is at $490.
Yeah, that's what I was just curious.
It's excellent.
What,
yeah.
$490 buys us?
Oh, at $490 buys us a lot, because let me tell you what we had to do. We had to say that we'd spend at least $200,000. So that's why we get a very good price for it, because we buy such a lot.
So what is the specifications of that when it comes to?
I have to go get it. I mean, it's
every year.
Yeah, the checks have.
Now, it designated the processor speed, the
we did it that it could go into, you know, you can do the syncing, and it does, you know, the fact
that.
Oh, yeah.
I think when you're shopping, you know, like when I go buy a computer, and I'm looking at, okay, this is what Dallas has, this is what Mac, or all Mac is not compatible. Okay. But like, this is what Dell, this is what Toshiba, this is, and then you're able to compare, okay, this is.
What we do is
But what I'm saying is, if you're doing that comparison, then we need to see it to make sure.
We did it with the bid.
We've done that. We gave that information
to you.
Yeah.
When we approve the
order. We've absolutely done that.
What I'm saying is that needs to be included on these purchases, so that way we know we're doing our due diligence.
I can do that if you want to pick one.
Yeah, because this is the same as the other bid that we used when we bought them.
So remember, every purchase that's brought forth,
so you want to have
due diligence. Just to ensure it's not sole sourced, you know, and that's really.
I can assure you it won't be sole sourced.
We trust you.
Sometimes it's like, oh wow, look at this.
If we're making a big purchase like this,
it's huge.
Because what we could do is RFP 1211. I mean, so we absolutely can
put
it in.
We just need a comparison sheet. I mean, we don't need the whole bid.
No, but you're going to have to show the comparisons. I mean, we can do that.
Yeah, I could have included the tabulation.
Yeah, we have the tabulation sheets. We have everything.
Yeah, and what specs fit under it, so that way we know.
I can do that for you.
I do have a question. What do we do with all our old hardware? Is it taken into account when we purchase these? Because it seems like we're on this 3-year cycle. A lot of these companies are probably taken back as a credit. I don't know.
We currently, because we have done with our district inventory and then this, you know, replacement cycle that we have, at this current moment, we do have quite a bit that is in surplus, that's been deemed a surplus from technology, and we're storing it currently. We are working with a company that had approached us about buying the equipment from us. They're in the business of
recycling,
refurbishing them, and then selling them out again. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they would buy it from us and actually give us a dollar amount per. So right now we've initiated that call, mm-hmm. because we spoke to them about 3 months ago, right before our first auction that we had in March.
But at this point right now, we need to do something because we've got lots of printers, monitors, and desktop or CPUs. And so we're in the process of getting that information to see if it's worth our time to deal with them or move on to find another source that can
be. Yeah, and with technology, it's not like we stop buying it. I think this is one of those things that we need to look at and ensure that we're not wasting them.
Right.
And, you know, we end up with a hunk of metal ultimately after 5 years. They're really not worth it after 5 years. After 2 years,
we could. Yeah, most of the ones we're replacing now are over 5 years old.
Well, I mean, and that's because now we're on the cycle, right, which is great. I just think that we need to come up with some sort of strategy when it comes to the recycling of the packet. Because
And, you know, now that we have, developed a cycle, we can do that.
Yeah.
Before, what we had to do was cannibalize them to keep them running. So, because we never were given a set amount of money to do on a replacement cycle. This is only year two of the replacement cycle. Mm. So this is the first time we're actually in the position that we have extra equipment that we're not cannibalizing.
That's awesome.
So this is a real step forward for the district that we're not going, you know.
And we have actually exceeded our year two target, and we've gotten into the 3 year replacement with this year's funding.
Awesome.
So we're in a good spot, but yes, we are looking to see how we can recycle and get, you know, some return back and get it in off our hands and not just have them sitting.
Yeah, I mean, the longer they sit there,
the less valuable they
become. Exactly.
And it's working exponentially, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Ms. Brigham,
sure.
You have like an organized chart of, you know, this year,
yes,
Damian's going to get two new computers, Garcia's going to get
more. We had it down, and then the finance people put a little bit of cricks in it. And what they did is we did have it exactly by what we do is we have a spreadsheet. We could actually send you that. However, we have a spreadsheet by, because we're using state comp funds, we're only replacing labs. So with that in place, what we're doing is for the state comp money on the replacement cycle, we go and we specify with finance help, so we can have good audit trail.
Yeah, that's where my mind is going.
And so what we're doing is we have it say exactly 33 machines are going to JDE. 52 is going to Jose Damian.
You've got it covered.
Oh, we have to because it's bought with state comp fund money. If it was bought with Title I money, we'd have a little bit more flexibility. But
the other question,
we take what we can.
But you do have an organized schedule.
And then we have to coordinate it with Anna and finance.
I think that's something we should definitely publicize and let them know. You're getting X amount, you know, not just to the administration.
Not just to the
community, to the teachers.
Oh, okay.
Because I think it's important that they understand that we're replacing the technology. We have one.
And we're being fair about it, right?
Yeah, everybody gets it, not once.
You know how we did it, Mr. Reddy? It's a good question. What we did is we took the oldest machines in the labs that cannot run some of the programs that need the kids. And what we're doing is replacing the oldest machines first. That's why some of them are well over 5 years old.
Yeah.
The other question I have regarding the specs, knowing the technology, how it changes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
These could be on sale tomorrow.
Yeah. And do you update your specs?
Yeah. And how often are we looking at the pricing?
Well, pricing and specs, really. Yeah.
Well, what we do is, a lot of times what happens is we get this and it has to be meet or exceed. And we always get, normally this time of year, we get the exceed spec.
Yeah,
because
the
new processor is coming out. We have an excellent relationship with GovConnect that they will, once we get to this point, we call them up and say, okay, do you have 72Es? And they'll say, you know what we have? We have this one. We don't have 72Es. This is what the 72E would be next month that we're written out. And then they turn around and it's usually less. So what we do is, we do them, finance, close your ears, we'll add a couple of more machines. So instead of 156, or 257, we might be able to get 300.
Mr. Gittick, do you think you could give us, and it wouldn't have to be this Thursday if it's a big issue, but you know, this Thursday, next Thursday, whatever you could. How many computers we've replaced this year, how much money we've spent on them, and the breakdown, you know, did it come out of Title I, did it come out of Comp Ed, did it come out of your pocket, and, you know, where that's going.
Like funding and location?
Funding and location, we can do that for you, Ms.
And, yeah, that would be
we can do that for you.
Funding and location.
We can do that.
Okay. I bet you have a computer.
If we do have it on a computer. Yes, ma'am, we do.
And these prices also include our imaging. They do the imaging.
They do the imaging.
It gets here. They actually take it out of the box. They set
and
it
they
up.
Set it up.
And they tag it. They put one of our tags on it and give us a database so we don't have to do all that work.
But that's because we order some. And that's what we do for the. So it's it not only saves in the hardware, it saves in the human cost.
Is there a motion? There's not a motion.
I move to purchase the desktop computers for district-wide use.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion, Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item 3 is purchase of SUV for the CTE program.
Do I have any discussion or motion?
I move to approve the purchase of the SUV for the CT program.
I'll
second that.
There's no discussion. Let me get pull the board.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item 4 is purchase of cargo van for the CTE program.
Do I have a motion?
Move to purchase the cargo van for the CTE program.
Do I have a second? I have a motion and a second. Just real quick, Ron, we did ask on these issues that we would do the same. Like, in other words, you said there was a 6-month feedback.
Right. Yes, that's why we need to. It's the only place we could find that they could actually get them to us by June 30th.
If you could provide that in, like, a recommendation as to why we went with Caldwell. Because I think what we're looking for is, it's great that you're presenting it, but once we read it, it'd be a lot
faster. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Just one more thing.
Why we chose the option we chose to...
Yeah, in other words, your recommendation is based on, you know, what qualifications or why.
The reason was because we're in a time crunch.
You know,
it doesn't even have to be its own page. It can be a recommendation.
We're absolutely right where I was just going to say that. In the memorandum underneath it, you put justification.
Yes.
I think that's an excellent idea.
You
almost like it.
If we had the time to do this in the beginning of the year, on the buy board, I could actually go in there, put an RFQ on an RFP on the buy board itself, and I invite all the buy board vendors to go in there, and I'll say, I want more. We need 2 weeks to respond to it. These are the specs, the vehicle we need, and they come back and they actually insert their pricing with their details. And at that closing time, it opens up and it does a spreadsheet for me that compares all of them. So I can invite all of them.
These are awesome prices you got.
They're very good prices.
They're incredible.
I did compare them to other co-ops, but they just didn't have one.
They're incredible.
This
GSA pricing.
If there's no discussion, tell me.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item 5 is purchase of truck for the CTE program.
I move to purchase the truck for the CTE program.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion. Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
These are all white, right? Ron? Oh, they had red and...
Yes.
Yeah, that was it. I remember that year. That was the year before I became the person. I remember Sam. That was what they had at the time. And
it was one money. Of those rapid purchases. It was in August I came in, and I remember it was like 2 weeks away from the 31st. Do
you gotta buy it.
These will have the FFA or the culinary people of their own design on those?
You could certainly look into something
we should
with
do it.
The district.
No, we should do it. You know what, the crafts design class should do it.
Absolutely.
It has to have the CISD logo.
Yeah.
But you can add anywhere else, you can add whatever you want to. Because of the exempt plates, it has
to have the CISD logo. Okay.
Okay, next item.
Purchase.
Sorry.
We're on the Suburban?
Yes. Yeah. Purchase of Suburban for the CTE program?
I move to purchase the Suburban for the CTE program.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I'm going to report the board if there's no discussion.
Mr. Quartaro?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next item.
Item 7, purchase of backpacks with supplies for the migrant education program.
I move to purchase the backpacks with the supplies for the migrant education program. And I get to drive in their new car with them.
Yes.
I have a motion and a second. I have any discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to call the board.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
So it's over the 10,000?
Yes. 12,500.
Come on.
Just kill me.
Hey. Come on. Next item.
Item 8, purchase of IMAC computers for the CHS CTE AV Technology Communications Program.
I move to purchase the IMAC computers for the CHS CTE AV Technology Communications Program.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion, I'll just make a comment. There's some programs that don't need. It's not matching comes to shape.
I want to continue that discussion and say that the PCs have far outpaced the Macs, and these are very expensive. How many are we getting? 25 for $78,000. That's the only thing I have to say.
It's understood. I understand both your comments.
Yeah, you can't really use AI on the PC. There's no discussion. Tony, can we pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item 9, purchase of IMAC computers for the CHS Graphic Design Class CTE program.
I move to purchase the IMAC computers for the CHS Graphic Design Class CTE program.
And I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Hearing no discussion. Tony, can we pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Horrible.
Sorry. Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Item 10 is purchase of equipment for culinary arts kitchen.
I move to approval of purchase of equipment for culinary arts kitchen.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Just real quick, was there any more money for the culinary arts? And we all went to in Austin, we went to Round Rock, one of their programs was there, and they had like a...
Mega Crushes?
No,
exactly.
It looked like the, what is it, the Ultimate Chef?
It was awesome.
It was an island spell.
It was.
Sorry.
They had an awesome kitchen.
They had like, sort of when you, like the Iron Chef, you know? And so the way to teach, it's something that, you know.
The UBC series?
Yeah, something like where you have.
We have stations.
And so it's something that we would need to look at, you know?
And if you look at that, it's only $3,500, but we went last month and we approved $17,000. This was part of it that was left off.
Right, so we added it.
So make sure we're in compliance with CH regulation, we bring it for you so we don't exceed the amount.
Right, so what if you add last month and this month, it did go over 10, that's why we did
17?
Yes, that's why we did this in
the month. So we're getting a kitchen for 17, but we're getting 35 max for 109,000.
Sorry.
Just buy it.
They gave out today. Never mind, I'm not going to tell you. I should have. Yeah. I didn't say anything.
You should have brought some.
Hearing no discussion. Tony?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
What's the next item?
President Rodriguez, administration would like to withdraw item I, discussion and possible action regarding first reading of TASB update 96.
Can you take it to a committee?
Yes, that is Ms. Carrasco's plan.
Okay. don't tell FDA I just said that.
It's on the tape.
I'll take us to the next item.
Item 3 is executive session, and the time is now 8:47 p.m., and the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code, Section 551, 071, 072, and 074 for discussion of real property, discussion regarding terms of superintendent contract, and to discuss current staffing and personnel assignments of certain district employees.